Turuntuset tulee Joonael.
And our main topic today is about creative thinking in marketing. To introduce the topic, I would like to say that creativity is something that is a really natural part in marketing. And despite the fact that marketing becomes increasingly dependent on the analytical side, we all face the limits and we really need to be creative within the firmly set boundaries. And Nikki, my first question to you is that can you share with us the top secret about how an organization can be more creative?
I think that actually the first step in that is understanding really what being creative is. I think that obviously I'm speaking mostly from a UK perspective, but I think it's true in a lot of other places as well. That creativity, people think, oh, I can't draw or I can't make up a story and therefore I am not creative. But actually, you know, there's so many things that can be creative. It's only about taking your brain to a slightly different place than you would originally have thought, or trying to think of something that somebody hasn't thought of before, or using what has been thought of before in a new way. And I find when we work with organizations, that is almost always the first battle, is people will say to us, oh, well, it's all right for you, but I'm not creative at all. And they mean that, you know, they can't act or they can't draw. They think they can't act or they can't draw or they can't do any of the things that are actually artistic endeavors. But everybody has a way in their life in which they are creative. So I think the first step is always about trying to open up people's thinking to realize that their own potential for creativity, and for it not to be a scary thing that maybe they had a bad experience at school or somewhere in their past, but that actually just the smallest thing in your life, you know, the smallest thing in your life can be a deeply creative act, and you can bring what you have as yourself, as a person, as a true part of your personality into your work life and into the organization, and not to be afraid of the element of play, really. I think a lot of the best ideas are come from when people aren't afraid to play and to bounce ideas around. And all right, you might then some of it might sound foolish or not very grown up, but that can be a very, very powerful thing. And the more I think you can enable people to feel comfortable enough and confident enough to open up and bounce ideas around and not to be afraid to be a little bit silly, perhaps. Because out of that fun and out of that silliness can actually come some very serious ideas.
Do you have any good example to share with us? Something that helps through playing to generate really, really ideas worth of millions?
In the minds of people who are not at all creative.
Can we do the question even tougher?
Everyone is in some way creative. Yes, I can, actually. We've worked with organisations before who are government funded and who have some quite dry, we would say, information to get across, but it's very important information. But they struggled, this particular group of people struggled in their presentations and in their one-to-one interviews and their client relationships with the sort of the boringness of the information they had to get across. And when we took them back through a workshop, took them back to things that they really remembered from their childhood, little bits of teaching or little events that happened or certain television programs or even certain advertisements that they'd seen when they were young, and unpicked those and analyzed why did that information stick with them and why was it still so easily remembered 30 or 40 or however many years down the line. And then they found that there were things about that, and it had, I won't go into all the details now, but things like rhyme and rhythm and a visual impact, and in some circumstances, some kind of tactile, kinesthetic or physical element, something of the unexpected, something that contained some emotion, something really that the recipient was able to feel a real strong sense of identification. And once they could access that from their own past, then we could unpick, see why it stuck, and apply those principles to some of the information that they had to pass on now, so that even though the information in itself might be quite, as I say, quite dry, the way in which you could use it meant that then they started to become more involved with the information. It didn't seem like I just have a list of things to do that I have to pass on to the person that I'm working with. I can actually find other ways to get this information across, which makes it more interesting to me, which in turn makes it more interesting to the person that I'm talking to, and means that it will be retained more easily and more deeply in the future.
Wow, it sounds very, very theoretical. Can you bring an example?
Yes, yes.
What really happened?
What did those people bring up after all those huge analyses?
The whole thing of every action has an equal and opposite reaction. And I remember the teacher slamming himself against the wall with both hands and at an angle, so that he was really like his feet were a long way from the wall, and he fell forward onto the wall, took all his weight in his hands. He said, "When I lean on the wall leans on me." And that sticks because it had impact, the physical impact of him getting in touch with the wall. It's a nice little rhyme. When I lean on the wall leans on me. And so from that, it's a really easy, simple mnemonic into every action has an equal and opposite reaction. I think the underlying principle holds true. And it's about, it's interesting for us to work as a company, to work in education and in business, because a lot of the things that are the problems in education, you know, that there are children who are just a bit bored in the lesson. And so they're not engaging, and they're not getting the most out of it for themselves, and they're not contributing as fully as they could to the entire organization that is the school. And it's exactly the same in business, you know, that you want your employee engagement to be as high as possible. You want the people who are there with you to care about your product or your service and to give the very best that they can and to feel that they have an involvement in the institution that is your business or your company. And so I think when you start to really work on your vision and your values and your narrative, whether it's internal or external as a business, then those kinds of things, you can work with your employees or your middle managers, not that it always comes from senior leadership on downwards. And those kinds of things, like when I lean on the wall leans on me. It's what are your rhymes? You know, it's like finding your taglines. It's finding a way of summing up your mission statement, of summing up who you are as a company and what you believe and what it is that makes everybody involved in that company get interested, get up in the morning and come to work and do the very best they can. And those kinds of little mantras, it seems sort of facile, but it isn't really. It's very empowering for people to know the why behind what they do. And you will get more out of them and more from your customers as well as from your employees.
Absolutely. Thank you. It was a very good story and brought us nearer to the understanding what we mean when we talk about the creativity. I just wonder, you work within a creative team. Mm-hmm. How do you keep your creative skills up to date and developing within the team?
Okay. I'm glad you asked me that, because we're called changing cultures because that is what we're interested in. And it doesn't matter whether the culture that you're changing, it might be an entire business, it might be an entire school, it might be for just one individual that you're coaching or mentoring. But also we're constantly trying to police ourselves and to challenge ourselves, really, to say, what cultures have we slipped into? What habits have we slipped into? You know, it's easy. All of us do it, whether as individuals or in our work life or our personal life. There are just those bits of life that you just, they just tick along and they're almost invisible to you. And suddenly you wake up and say, actually, do you know what? You know, that corner of my house is a complete mess. Why am I even keeping this? And that sort of thing, that I think in all aspects of your life, it's important to try every now and again just to wake yourselves up and go, why are we doing this? And is it just habit? And is there a better way? And particularly, you know, the world we live in moves so quickly that it's easy to suddenly feel like you're one of those guys on a log treading as fast as you can and just rolling and rolling and rolling in the water just to stay exactly where you are. I think the clearest example I can think of for us was we live fairly spread apart in the Midland, in the middle of England, the four directors of the company. So between the two extremes is, well, I suppose on average there's about 50 miles between where we are. We didn't want to have a central office. We saw no reason for the expense of that. It's easy for us, you know, like I'm here talking to you from my lounge in England now and you're in Estonia. So just to
no
talk
problem,
to
just tell.
Well, you know, so we don't need to do that. Most of the meetings and consultation, the kind of work we do, we want to be going to our clients anyway, because we want to experience what it's like in their work environment. So there's really no need for us to have a central base. But on the other hand, you know, we have a fortnightly directors meeting. We didn't want to be just always around a kitchen table, and we didn't want to be in a cafe, and there are certain places where we could have done hot desking, but that doesn't really work for us. And it seemed like it was perhaps an opportunity that we could do something with and make something of, rather than just thinking, oh, where are we, you know, which table are we going to sit around this month to talk about our business? So we invented a thing that we call table trade. And the way it works is that we will approach somebody or a friend of a friend or however the contact is made. Sometimes we are proactive and it's a business that we would like to know more about. And sometimes it's somebody that from our past that we need to renew our acquaintance with, or however it is. And we say, okay, may we please have, if we have a room with a table in it that we can have our directors meeting in for the whole day, then at some point during that day, whenever suits you, we will hold an hour training session for whoever it is appropriate for. It might be your sales team, it might be your managers, it might be whoever it is. So basically, and we have a little menu and say, which of these trainings would you like? So no money changes hands. We get to have a room for the day. They get a bit of free training in an area that they're interested in or they want to explore more. But of course, as well as those things happening, it also gets us out there. It gets us seen. It's a really interesting marketing tool. And it's something a little bit unusual. And it costs nothing for us.
It's a barter. It's a barter for you.
Yes, it's a barter. Exactly. It is a barter. But I suppose my point is that to have a creative idea doesn't necessarily have to have a financial benefit or involvement. But of course, that will come. You get the return later on in your business because of the way that you've managed to think about something different. And if you are going to go out, if you're going to have the guts to go out and say, all right, we will call ourselves Changing Cultures, and we will say that we are experts in creativity and engagement, well, then you've kind of got to push it a little bit, haven't you? Otherwise, people won't believe you.
Absolutely.
So we try very hard to, in all aspects of our internal operations, with the exception of finance.
No creativity in finances.
It says no creativity there at all.
Okay. No problem. Taxes are nothing to play with, or finances probably not. Right.
But straight down the line, let's make it clear.
Absolutely. If you think you have worked with different types of organizations and companies, what are the, the best tools you can teach them to be more creative?
Like I was saying earlier, I do think that the most important thing is to enable people to feel that they can be creative, to give them permission It's a really strange thing. It's much more important, I think, than we really give it credit for, whether people give themselves permission to do a thing or whether they feel that permission is granted from whomever it needs to be granted from. And I think some of the tools that can help with that, kind of counterintuitively, are actually if you have a sort of structure. You know, it's like the thing of just there's a difference between just sitting there and going, oh, the door's always open, or you can always come and give me an idea, which in some ways is a little bit daunting. Whereas, you know, if you say, right, okay, we are going to have a creative meeting for an hour every Tuesday lunchtime, or that there's some kind of structure. That structure and a little bit of constraint, and even to say, right, okay, next Tuesday, the thing we want to be worried about is what conversations are we having in around the water cooler? How can we make the most of those? Lots of fun things and crazy ideas come out of that. Well, okay, you know, let's discuss that. How do we not waste any of the chitty chat that goes on, because a lot of those moments are valuable, or it might be. And then people know, right, okay, Tuesday we're going to talk about this, or the following Tuesday we're going to talk about how does your brand as a person relate to the brand as a company? Where are the connecting points there? And that's going to be that Tuesday's meeting. Do you know what I mean? So I think by setting, though you wouldn't think that the constrictions would be a good thing to help creativity happen, actually I think they are. If you set up certain specifics and certain limits, then it kind of helps people not be daunted. You know, one of the things that that we do sometimes is to kind of try to chunk down, if you like, the concept of creativity, because it is a kind of daunting thing, and particularly if people have, during their growing up time, have come to think of themselves, Raoul, as not creative at all, then they need a bit of a helping hand, as I said earlier, you know, to see, right, okay, what is creativity, and actually how can you break it down into smaller chunks of thing that you can get a handle on and think, oh yeah, okay, I don't think of myself as creative, and yet on the other hand I think I have a good sense of recall, for example, which you perhaps wouldn't instantly think is an element of creativity. But if you're not recalling all that has happened to you before, where are you bringing your ideas from? Do you know what I mean? So you can kind of start to help people think about it in ways that are smaller and easier to deal with, and then see that they act to start to have faith in their own ability to create, because I do truly believe that everyone is creative in some way, shape or form.
But if I'm looking around here in Estonia, I don't know what about UK, maybe you are more talented there, but here in Estonia, what I see actually in many companies, in most of companies, the aspects of creativity are downsized because the leaders or the culture of the company, they somehow think that this is something too crazy for us. It's something mm-hmm. not serious enough. Mm-hmm. It's something that we'll, as you said, you have to play. Why should we play? We are a serious company. We're doing business here. Why we need this creativity? And all the time when the consultants are coming in and trying to bring in some more creativity, not many of them will accept it, actually. Why is it like that?
Well, maybe it's not in the case in
UK.
No, I do think you're right. And yes, we have the same thing here. And I think that, yes, it's a difficult fear to overcome in some cases. And it is bizarre, like you say, because the evidence shows that an awful lot, the power of that playfulness and that fun and that creativity in terms of, you know, getting profitability is massive. I mean, look at Apple, for example. You know, their company brand, that was a Steve Jobs marketing genius, brought a playfulness into his brand that was super attractive. And yet, as you say, it still can be a difficult thing to it's not always appropriate, I know. But really, it's all communication, isn't it? And it's all about how you can help, how you want people to relate to you and relate to your brand. And that you can't deny that warmth, the playfulness, the humanity that comes out of just letting your guard down a little bit. Yes, it's scary to let your guard down a little bit. And also, it's hard work. That's the other thing. You know, I think a lot of the time when people say, oh, yeah, you know, it's not for us, it's a little bit crazy, it's a bit out there, we're just not that kind of a... That can also be a mask for... we just want to carry on doing the same thing we've always done, because that is a lot easier than thinking of something new or than going down or taking the risk of a new path. You know, it's more of a high risk strategy in some ways, or it seemed to be more of a high risk strategy. But the payoff is massive internally as well. You know, I think that's...
How do you measure this benefit internally or externally? How we can put it in numbers so the financial guys also can rejoice?
Well, it's the financial guys that should be benefiting. I mean, when it works with dollars, doesn't it, really? You know, it's not just that everybody has a great time and nothing happens to the bottom line. You know, the whole point is when it works properly. You know, when you go to... when you go to a conference and at some point it says, oh, and some time put aside for networking. And what happens is, and it's normally at the beginning and it might be a little bit after lunch, and you arrive and you make yourself a cup of coffee and do either with the person that you came, you sit and have a cup of coffee, or the first person that you bang into, you have a cup of coffee with them, and quite often then a little bit stuck with them, or they are with you for the whole day, and it just doesn't seem to quite work, you know. And you just think, well, you've just put networking there because you just don't really know. And surely, if you've got that amount of people in a room, and they've all got something to say, and they've all got a reason to be there, then that is a waste. That nothing is happening during that time. So we did a little bit of work for...
You tried to change it.
Pardon?
You tried to change it.
Change the culture. Yes. So we did. And it's actually something that we've done a few times now, but the very first time we did it, the first company that employed us, we managed to persuade them, actually. They didn't... and we made like little installations around the conference center, so very like archetypal romantic meeting spots, but they were very small. So like under the clock and the old oak tree and the train platform and those kinds of places. And when people came and got their packs when they arrived, they would also get a red rose or a yellow daffodil or a rolled up newspaper or something that they would carry with them that wasn't too cumbersome, that meant that when, and then there would be a meet for them. So the networking time wasn't just random networking time. It was, you know, you will be meeting your perfect match, your perfect business match under the clock, and they will be carrying, be wearing a pink carnation, carrying a rolled up newspaper at 12:15, this kind of thing.
Wow.
Thank you.
It's really creative. I just want to ask that that if you come now from the organizations to an individual level, so what can every person do himself in order to create creativity or in order to become more creative, looking at the problems, looking at the solutions?
To grow it in yourself.
Yeah, to grow it in yourself or to develop a skill of creativity, if I would call it so.
That's a really good question. And I think you're right. You know, it is something like a muscle that you can grow and you can flex and you can learn how to do it more. And it is a deeply personal thing. You know, I think if anybody, or any writers that I've ever spoken to, you know, how do you write? And you say, well, you do it. You just write. You sit there with a blank piece of paper and you just make yourself do it. And it doesn't matter if it's rubbish, but you just do it. And you have to do it every day and you have to do it over and over and over and over and over again. And I think there's something, I don't think you can say, do this. And you will become more creative, except for the one thing of giving yourself time. That is what I would say. You know, if there isn't a universal panacea, but I think that is the thing. If you say, right, okay, this is my time. I am going to go for a walk for half an hour and I will not speak to anybody, or I'm going to sit quietly and breathe for half an hour, or I am going to write something on a piece of paper for half an hour. Do you know what I mean? It's like giving your brain the time to do what it can do. Because I think that the main blocks for being creative, if you come at it from the other side, are just the constant overload of stuff that drowns out what you might be able to do in your own brain space, is just the constant amount of, oh, I've got a list of things to do. The panic of, I'm going to be dead in a minute, the fear of failure, those kinds of obstacles that come up that stop you being creative. Because it's a, and it comes back to that sense of play, actually. Maybe that's it. You know?
Yeah. I just remember that.
Time, that's what I would say, is just if you want to make yourself more creative, then say, right, okay, this is it. This is my half hour. Make myself more creative time, and I'm going to do this once a day, once a week, whatever it is, and make that be it. And it doesn't matter what it is you do in that time, except for just allowing your brain, find out for yourself, you know, find out for yourself what makes your brain start to churn. And do you need to have a little bit of stimulus? Maybe you do. Maybe you do need to go and have a walk in the countryside. Maybe you don't need that kind of level of stimulus. Perhaps you're happy just to, you know, put the duvet over your head for 10 minutes or whatever. Do you know what I mean? It's just giving yourself the time to explore what your brain can do without expectation and without pressure.
Very good. I just remember that that what usually has helped me to solve the problems is that to take a short run. Maybe
yes.
About 30 minutes or 40 minutes, and usually just telling your brain that this is the time that that you can rest or come up with the new ideas. And the more you do it, the more faster the brain starts somehow to generate the new connections, so you see somehow the pieces fitting together in different way as you thought before, and it helps. So just a kind of regular routine and telling your brain that now you have to be creative has helped me a lot.
Yes, no, I think you're right, Animal. I think you're completely right. And there's something about running as well has that kind of rhythm that
is
quite kind of biological.
that helps kind of pick
the systems. But for you, it might not work. For the next person might need something else. But it is just about finding the space your brain to allow to surprise you. And to be and to train the big bit of you, if you like, to be able to listen. So you're aware when your brain is there going, hello, 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 I've got it, hello, that you're able to listen and pick up on it and then not be scared of that. And you know, I write stories for children, and that's my main thing, is that I just put words down and I don't mind, you know. I think, right, if I'm going to come back, the next time I sit down and do this, if I think they're all rubbish, that's fine. If I want to just erase them, that's fine. But you have to make something happen. You can't just ponder.
Thank you. I come to the very last question of the interview now.
The first part of the interview.
We're having a habit here to talk about Estonian food producers, and this is because of the Russian banned import of European foods. Estonian food producers were very good in Russia. The products were very very loved, let's say so, and now they cannot export to Russia anymore. And we decided that every week in our marketing radio we talk about how could Estonian food producers be better in the marketing or production or anything we can suggest them. And my question now is that how should food producers in Estonia be more creative in marketing?
On border.
even probably not only in Estonia, but in general, wherever. If you look at the food production field, where are the ways that they could be more creative?
When I saw that on your email, I thought, ooh.
What a question.
It's quite hard. Yes. I suppose, so, and I did want to clarify a little bit. When are you talking about food producers being more creative in their marketing to the consumers or to the retailers or both?
Whatever. Any idea is
welcome.
Whatever
they could do to sell more in a situation where they can't sell now.
To one of the main markets.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When I work with children, there are certain things that you know you can get an in, and food is one of them because they all eat. They understand, you know, there's a lot of experience, of particularly with very small children, they don't have yet because they haven't kind of got out there and experienced it. Eating, they know. Food, they know. And there's something so human and basic and primeval about just eating that I think that would be my way in. Let's get children and young people involved because, you know, you start the selling to them, they're going to eat, they've got the rest of their lives to eat your food. So let's try and encourage them to be on your side from the word go. But I think that would be, it would be like, what's at your soul? What's at the very heart of you as a human? You know, who really are you? How do you self-identify? What motivates you? What defines you? And I would get really kind of nitty-gritty, quite hardcore, soulful stuff. It's the food. It's the food you eat that comes out of the land that you live on. You know, and actually get people very emotional about it because it is an emotional thing. Maybe you are what you eat. Maybe you're not. But it's a very personal thing. And so that, I think that would be where I suddenly given the task of helping food producers market more creatively, I would say, well, look at what it actually is. You know, what are you actually doing? What's really at the heart of it? And it is, you know, it's that soulful thing, eating. You've got to do it. And so I would go really personal and really human with my message, actually.